Going Linux, episode 262, Computer America, number 79. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America. Before we begin our Computer America episode for this month, I want to let you all know that due to an increase in workload demands and other life changes, I've decided not to continue as the Linux correspondent on the Computer America show beginning January 2015. So this is, in fact, my second last appearance on the Computer America radio show. I've enjoyed my appearances on Computer America for 2 hours each month for the last 7 years. Can you believe it's been 7 years? I appreciate the exposure that the show has given to the growing popularity of the Linux operating system and to the growth of the Going Linux podcast over the years. Thanks, Craig. And I know we have this episode and one more in December to go, but I just wanted to say thank you. And for all of those of you in the audience who do enjoy the Computer America episodes, Craig will have a new Linux correspondent beginning in January. We don't know who it is yet, but I'm sure that you will enjoy whoever is my replacement at that time. And feel free to go to computeramerica.com to subscribe to their podcast or watch it live as they record it once a month for the Linux episodes. So thanks again, Craig. Thanks to Computer America, all the co-hosts that he's had over the years. I've enjoyed my time on the show. Here's today's Computer America episode. Enjoy.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And Ben, you're here. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay. Well, I said we've got a great, interesting internet show. And I'll tell you what, if you have a comment or a question about the topic of Linux, this is the show to give us a call. It's the third Thursday of the month, and that means it's time for our All Linux show. Of course, Linux operating system continues to become more and more popular. It's important. It's an important operating system, so every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux, right? So if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. All right. And joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How the heck are you?
I am the heck very good.
Hey, Larry.
Yeah, hey. Yeah. Yeah, I've been sitting waiting patiently here for all of the discussion to subside down so we can start talking about Linux. And I have one addition.
Yes.
Happy birthday to Ben's mom.
Yes. Well, happy birthday to Ben's mother and my wife, Cynthia. So. Now, let me, before we get started, also, I want to mention a couple things that were something else that's important. How long have you been with Computer America now, Larry? You've been doing this for...
Let's see. It's got to be 7 years.
Seven.
Like that.
7 years.
No, it's not that long. No. It's at least six.
I know. Maybe,
been
maybe
a while.
Maybe longer. But Larry, of course, being our Linux expert for so many years and doing an incredibly amazing job. But, you know, things change, and evidently looks like Larry is going to be passing the baton to another correspondent.
Aww.
I know. Yeah, exactly. But now we're in the process of talking to a number of people who will be filling his shoes. That's going to be really hard to do, of course, but so Larry is going to be passing the baton now.
You're saying I've got big feet?
Could be. I thought I could slide that one by you. But the thing is, we're talking to a number of people now. Larry's going to do the Tonight Show, and of course, on December he will do the December Linux Show, and that will be his final Computer America Linux Expert show with us as a Linux Expert. Of course, you'll always be welcome to come back and join us and get into Linux discussions. That door will always remain open to you.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And I will heckle the new
you come back and heckle the new correspondent.
But of course, you'll have to pay the non-frequent guest prices. So,
That's true.
Your member club's card is going to be revoked. So
but you can always come in also. You can always poke your nose in the chat room, too.
Of course.
Love to see
you
in there. So anyway, again, we just want to extend a big, hearty, and heartfelt thank you to you for being our correspondent for so long and doing such a marvelous, wonderful job, and we'll miss you as the Linux correspondent.
Yeah!
Exactly. Exactly. So, well, that said, Larry does is that he picks a topic each month to discuss with Linux. Now, even though if your question is different, as long as it's a Linux question, it doesn't have to be on topic, we will stop what we're doing and we'll go immediately to your call and we'll take it. But in the meantime, the topic for tonight that Larry has selected is the computer operating system doesn't matter anymore. So, .. So, you should use Linux. ! So that is the topic,
how does it make you feel that the year of the Linux came after operating systems stopped mattering?
Well, hey, the Linux desktop is I guess Google Chrome.
Hey, that's something. I mean, Chrome seems to be making a pretty good go at it.
No, absolutely. Chrome and Android and the Linux desktop as a Linux, a full-fledged Linux distribution as opposed to a derivative of, something that is operated by Google or another entity. Linux as a desktop is becoming more and more popular. I see more and more people using it, more and more people asking questions on our email and on the podcast as well. So it's definitely becoming more popular, and it's just slower to catch on than DOS.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. So what we're going to do, as I said, we're going to start looking at these topics and kind of discuss them. And again, if you have a comment or a question about Linux, we will certainly pause what we're doing and go to your question. But so let's start. So you started off by saying, okay, the computer operating system doesn't matter anymore, so you should use Linux. So explain that further. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's a little thought-provoking intentionally.
Yeah.
Today almost anything you want to do on a computer is available to do in the cloud. And because of the fact that cloud computing has become so prevalent, it really doesn't matter what the operating system is you're using. As long as you have an internet connection and a browser, you can do almost anything that you want to do, and almost anything that you needed Windows or a Mac or Linux or Unix or some other desktop operating system to do in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100% there yet, but some examples of some of the things that people do every day.
Mm-hmm.
Email.
Yeah.
You've got Gmail and Yahoo Mail and Outlook.com and all kinds of things from various internet service providers out there. Some of them shadier than others, but I mean, the biggest ones are Gmail and Yahoo Mail and Outlook.com at this point. And so you can get your email. You can do it right from the browser. You don't have to have a full-fledged email client sitting on your computer taking up space. And you can do everything in those web-based email clients that you can do on a desktop, except Well, I was going to say, except save the mail to your desktop, but you can even do that from the cloud if you wanted to.
All right. So,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, now, are we talking about, obviously, you're talking about the different desktops, and you can do all these things, you know, Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Outlook.
Sure.
All these functions are available and that you would want to do in the cloud. And again, of course, people are using Linux to do that. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's the point. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're using Linux, whether you're using Windows, whether you're using OS X or something else, Google Chrome, for example, or your Android phone. If you want to do any of these things in the cloud, it doesn't matter what you use as the device or even what you use as the computer operating system. You just need something to get you on the internet. And Linux does that just fine. And there are no number of reasons to use Linux. But what I'd like to do is kind of go down the list of some of the things that you can do in the cloud, just
sure.
to fill out the list of things that perhaps people aren't aware that these things exist out there in the internet for you to be able to do.
Okay.
Video conferencing is one of those things. And certainly that's very much a business function. A lot of companies use that to talk to their customers or to have video conferences within their own company. And it's become, I mean, we're using a video conference system right now,
mm-hmm.
Google
yeah.
Hangouts.
Yeah.
And there are a few out there as well. Big Blue Button is the name of an open source video conferencing system. Fuse, F-U-Z-E, is another one. Any Meeting. Skype, of course, is a very popular one for video conferencing. And
they make versions of, they make all, they have Skype for Linux, you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not a Windows version that you're trying to run in Linux. It's actually a native Linux version of Skype.
That's exactly right. But that version and the version that you run on Windows or the version that you run on Mac are the client. What I'm saying is the folks at Microsoft are coming out with a version of Skype that runs on the internet. You don't have to install Skype to be able to use it.
Well, that's it, because I found that a little surprising because, as you know, Skype was purchased by Microsoft. So
right.
Microsoft is the Windows company, and so they make a product that supports Linux, and at least they didn't stop that. So,
well, in recent years, especially with the exit of Mr. Ballmer, mm-hmm. Microsoft has turned the corner on a lot of things that they used to hold dear, including bashing Linux.
Mm.
They've made a big deal of being much more supportive of Linux. They're a major contributor to the Linux kernel and have been for quite some number of years. But more recently, they have actually been vocalizing their support for Linux, even in a presentation by the head of Microsoft, Satya Nadella. I think it was he who had a slide up that said Microsoft, a heart, and Linux. Mm-hmm. Microsoft loves Linux. And what they're doing there is they're making contributing to the Linux kernel so that it runs more efficiently on their Azure platform. Because they want to be able to virtualize Linux servers out there more efficiently and more effectively. So they're becoming much more friendly towards Linux, and they're developing more web-based applications as well. I think they've realized that the computer operating system, and especially the software that runs on that computer operating system, is becoming less and less important, which is the whole point of this this discussion here.
Yeah.
And as a result, they're developing things like Skype for the web and Office 365, online-based versions of the software that they have been selling for years and years and years. Of course, they haven't really been selling Skype, but certainly they've generated a lot of profitability from Microsoft Office,
so
subscriptions for the online version.
So what you're saying is that right now, for me to run Skype, I have a piece of software. It's a Skype software, and I run it, and then it goes on. You're saying that's going to become that's going to go bye-bye. Basically, I'm just going to go to a Skype's website and just launch and just
like is contact. It like a plugin?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the details of it, but what I do know is they've announced that this Skype version of the web will replace their conferencing software that they use right now for business, that they sell for business called Link, L-Y-N-C. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be replacing Link with a Skype for the web. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know whether they're taking the code that is the Skype client and rewriting it for the web, or whether they're taking the Link software and just rebranding it as Skype. But the key point here is they're moving Skype to the internet the way they've moved Word and Excel and PowerPoint to the internet with Office 365. And of course, there are other alternatives on the web for Office as well, like Google Docs and Zoho Office and several others out there as well. So you're not locked into Microsoft. But these days, if you want to run Microsoft Office, a full version of Microsoft Office on Linux, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Office 365.
Well, there you go.
And you can run it from the web.
Okay. So
from your browser. Yeah, exactly. So the days of having to run Wine to just get Microsoft Office is on Linux are gone.
So I guess like Linux can, because it like the shift to the cloud really is just an ongoing trend that's not, you know, it's not because Apple's doing it, not because Microsoft's doing it, not because Linux is doing it. It's because it's easier. You know, the more you can put in a browser, the less it's reliant on an operating system, the more accessible it is. So this move to the cloud, I guess it helps Linux because then you can do more things.
Well, it does. And the nice thing about it and the point that I'm making here is the operating system doesn't matter, so you should use Linux, is this, that there are all these software components out there that you can use from the cloud. You don't need to install software on your computer anymore. So why spend a lot of money for a computer that runs Windows or that runs OS X, even though they provide the operating system with the computer, when you don't need that brand new computer with a brand new operating system that requires you to upgrade periodically and to pay money to upgrade in some cases. And if you do install software on there, when you do upgrade your operating system, even if the upgrade for the OS is free, you then have to go out and buy a new version of whatever that software was to be compatible with the new version of the operating system. And then once the operating system gets too powerful for the hardware that you're running on, now you've got to go out and buy new hardware. It's a never-ending cycle of continued expense. So use Linux. The upgrades are free. The if you do want to install software, for the most part, it's free. And certainly you can use the internet versions of most of the software that we're talking about here. And you don't need to buy new hardware in order to run Linux. You can run it on your existing hardware or even old hardware, borrowed hardware, a computer that you got at the thrift store, when you buy secondhand off of Amazon. And Linux will run just fine on there, and you're not required to upgrade. You can hang back as long as, you know, with other operating systems, it's the same deal. You don't want to get too old a version of the operating system because you want to make sure that it's secure and that it's patched and all that sort of stuff. But with Linux, typically, you don't have the same requirements to spend money for upgrades that you do, even if you're using all online software. About the only one that works in a similar sort of way is Google's Chrome operating system, because it is specifically designed to run all of its applications off the internet. And as a result, if you have hardware that will run Google Chrome, you're doing just fine.
Is Google Chrome based Linux based?
It is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's based on the Linux kernel. It's not what you would consider a mainstream Linux distribution like Red Hat or SUSE or Ubuntu or something like that is specifically Linux and runs Linux applications. Google's Chrome operating system is more like, it's analogous to Android that runs on phones. It's a specialized version of Linux that's been heavily modified by Google to run the specific software that's a bit proprietary that runs on top of it. There's the Linux kernel, which is truly open source. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there is the Chromium operating system, which is also open source, which is developed by Google. And then Google Chrome, as the proprietary layer on top of that, just that. It's a proprietary layer that's controlled by Google.
Yeah, but why are they doing that? I mean, because they don't want people mucking around with it. The two other layers you mentioned are open source, but Google mm-hmm. wants to have control over the operating system. Is that why they're doing it?
You know, I can't get into the heads of the folks at Google, but my suspicion is, yeah, it's got something to do with that. They do want to. Hey, they're in business, and they're in business to sell Chromebooks and advertising and the other things that they sell. And as a result, the way business locks in people is to locks people into their products or sure. services is to provide intellectual property or some sort of proprietary version that can't be copied by the competition. And the Google Chrome operating system is just that. It's that proprietary layer on top
right.
of the open source space. And that's kind of an ongoing model for a lot of software companies out there these days. And I dare say that Microsoft is doing that too. They're using some open source software as a base for some of the things they're doing.
So there's no outcry from the Linux community saying, you can't do, you're making it proprietary. I mean, it's being accepted. I mean, people who use Linux say, if they want to use that, it's not a major objection, is what you're saying.
Well, there can't be any objection because open source is just that. The whole philosophy behind open source is to allow people to do with the software what they want to do with it. Now, there are different versions of the licenses that impose different restrictions on you, but the most permissive of those licenses will let you take the software that's licensed that way under that open source license. And you can take that software and use it as it is. You can modify it. You can sell it. You can give it away. You can sell the modified version that you have. You can build proprietary extensions to it, depending on the license. Some of the open source licenses don't allow that. But the versions of the software that these companies use, they carefully select those with licenses that allow them to do this. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole purpose behind open source, is to allow people to do with the software what they want to do with it.
Yeah.
And if you want to rewrite it so that it works the way you want it to work, again, depending on the license, you may have to license it the same way as the original software was, or you may be able to make it completely proprietary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
There is no outcry. There's no... Yeah. pushback. It's the way it's supposed to be.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, please continue.
All right. So some other examples of things that you can do online that it doesn't matter whether you're using OS X, Microsoft Windows, or any version of Linux, or the Chrome operating system, or any other operating system.
Sure.
Social media applications like Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter and Pinterest and on and on and on. You could go on forever these days. So all of that you can do on your phone, on any operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And watching movies and TV. This is the way that movies and TV are watched days, is on the internet, Netflix, iTunes, other streaming services from other networks, they're all out there to be able to watch what we old timers used to say, turn on the boob tube. kids these days, they're not watching television. They're watching
whippersnappers.
On the inner tubes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And even radio. You used to tune in the radio dial, right?
Yeah,
not
no more.
Anymore.
No.
You hit up Spotify or Jamendo or Stitcher or iTunes, and again, what, on and on,
yeah,
and
what's
on.
The one that, what's the one we use? Gator? What is it, Ben?
No, we use Grooveshark.
Grooveshark, yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And then there's the, the satellite radio companies out there as well, mm-hmm. which are much more akin to the old day, terrestrial radio. But still, mm-hmm. If you want to listen to any of that stuff, just hook up your computer, go to the right website, and you've got free, even open source music, if you want to look at it as open source music. Jamendo, it is full of... music that's freely shareable as opposed to the proprietary stuff that you get from iTunes and stuff you have to purchase.
How do they get around all the digital rights, the copyright laws and everything?
Well, there are musical artists that actually give away their music, and they license it or copyright it in a way that allows you to allows them to give it away and you to give it away and to subscribe to it just like you would a free podcast, for example.
Cool.
So there are artists out there that just want to get their names out there. And, you know, these days you hear a lot about things like Taylor Swift stepping away from, I think it was Spotify that she was protesting against. And if you listen to the discussion, Spotify pays a lot of money to the record label. And how much of that actually goes to the artist? A very small portion.
All right.
And so these artists really aren't making their money off of the album sales.
Sure.
They're making it off of concerts.
Hey, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to continue on. Larry Bushy is our correspondent. It's our All Linux Show here on the Computer America Show on the Boost Radio Network, the Blog Talk Radio Network, the IRN Radio Network. Stay with us.
Going Linux, it's our Linux-only show with Larry Bushy from the Going Linux podcast. And, we're talking about all the things that you can do that are pretty much at this point independent of your operating system. So, you don't have to wonder, if I go to Linux, am I going to lose the ability to listen to music? Am I going to lose the ability to taste food? Am I going to lose the ability to do this or that? And I guess at this point, it's no. So, we're just getting into music and podcasts and all the things that keep you entertained.
Right. Yeah. And even beyond entertaining, if you're a producer of these things, there are plenty of video editors out there. I meant to add them to the show notes list and didn't add them in, but some of the ones that are there, OpenShot is a video editor that works quite nicely in Linux. Kden Live, another one. And one that is a little bit proprietary, but provides a much smoother experience, in my estimation, is something called Lightworks. You may recognize that if you've used it on Windows or Mac. It's very cross-platform, and from what I understand, it's exactly the same code base across all three platforms these days, and as a result, it is a native Linux application when you run it on Linux, native Windows on Windows, and native OS X on OS X. So, and I've been using it for some of the instructional videos that I put together, and I've been having a much smoother experience with Lightworks than I have with some of the other products out there. And I suspect that they've been at it a lot longer than some of the other folks. So, if you're a video editor, video producer, lots of Linux software to help you do that, and you can even do it on the internet. There are video editors on the internet as well, and I don't recall them, and I didn't put them in the show notes, so I can't cite them for you, but they are out there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Audio editors?
Audio editors as well. One of our listeners had suggested an audio editor. What was it? Audio.
Audacity?
No, Audacity is a client that runs on your computer, and it's cross-platform. But
you're right.
Auphonic, that's what it was. A-U-P-H. ONIC, I think is what it was. Mm-hmm. And it it is a web-based video editor, or excuse me, audio editor that helps you to get rid of the noise and get rid of some of the background things that are going on, help you to do audio compression and those kinds of things that you would do in a classic editor. That particular one is a little bit limited in that it can't do all of the things that Audacity or some of the other audio editors can do, but it's getting there. So audio editing, probably something that needs a little bit more work for the cloud-based applications before we can say that you can go 100% if you're a someone who does audio editing, as mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. But many podcasters will actually, rather than edit the audio, they'll just use Google Hangouts, take the audio out of that, and use it as it comes without any editing. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit more of a perfectionist than that, so I like to use Audacity, and that's my tool of choice.
Mm-hmm.
There are photo managers out there as well that run on the cloud, like Pixlr. There are a number of them that when you get a Google Chrome computer, it looks like they're installed on there, and it's really just a link to the application out there on the internet, or it's a Google Chrome plugin. And again, it runs from the cloud. So even photo managers are out there, and photo editors are out there for you to use on the cloud. File conversion utilities, there are a few of those out there as well. And many of them come as a lot of the software that is cloud-based software comes as Google Chrome extensions, because Google has, with the Chrome operating system and the Chrome browser, has really taken this whole idea of cloud computing to the next level for the average computer user. And as a result, a lot of these features that are available for the Chrome operating system are also available, if you're running the Chrome browser, for any operating system that's capable of running the Chrome browser, which is virtually everything out there. So file conversion, Cloud Convert is the one that I use, and it will convert just about any format into any other format. So you want
that's
your,
very useful. I mean, it's very handy. I used to have something called CanOpener.
You
want
a file in OGG format, you run it through Cloud Convert.
Yeah,
the other way around.
Yeah, I used to have something called CanOpener, and but they went bye-bye. But when you need it, it's really nice to have something like that.
Yeah, and this Cloud Convert, it's not just audio or video. It's document files. If you need to convert something from Word to Word Perfect or something like that, you can use that, or Excel to whatever the Mac version is. It'll do the conversion.
Exactly.
And it'll do it in the cloud. You select the file you want to convert.
Right.
You say convert it, and it sends you a message when it's done, if
very
it's
nice.
Going to take longer than a few seconds.
Very nice.
So very nice. So let's see, where were we?
File archivers.
File archivers, compression, like a zip compression utility.
Mm-hmm.
Those are available as well for online use as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that, do I have it handy here? No, I don't. There was one that I was using recently that does the conversion. I know. It's on my other window over here.
All right.
Okay, here we go. Zip Unzip App is the one that's available as an application to run as a Chrome plugin. Zip Unzip App.
Does not Linux have, just like Mac has, it's part of the operating system that allows you to, compress and decompress?
Yep.
So why would you?
Yeah, all of these things are capable. You're capable of running applications that run on Linux, that run on your Linux operating system for free,
mm-hmm.
That do all of these things.
Got it.
My point here is, if you want to use OS X, you can use OS X and get all of these functions again for free
mm-hmm.
online.
Got it.
Even, you know, even running Microsoft Office on Linux, if you wanted to, that sort of thing.
Sure.
As we're saying, it doesn't matter what your operating system is.
Got it.
These days.
Well,
so
you know, that
you
was,
may as well
this,
run Linux.
This was the great. The internet was supposed to be the great equalizer. When you use the internet, everything was supposed to be compatible with everything else, and that trashed. It just didn't. It did not happen, and it's taking us this long to finally begin to see these things on the horizon, where the internet is becoming again what it was really intended to be—the great equalizer. Too, it didn't matter what platform you're using, it didn't matter what browser you're using, it was just going to work.
Yeah, exactly. And we're getting there. We're getting there fast as well.
Mm-hmm.
My worry is that we're going to end up with these online versions of proprietary software, and we're still going to be using Microsoft Office for years and years. It should just be the online version of it.
365,
But at least it'll be you'll be able to run it on any operating system you want to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So, online internet versions of spyware and malware and things like that. even file storage. This is something else that you can do without ever having it go on your hard drive. All of your document files, your spreadsheet files, your music files, all of this you can store in the cloud these days. Software like Dropbox and Box.net and Google Drive and even Microsoft's OneDrive. A lot of these services started off with meager amounts of file storage in the cloud, but as internet connections have grown faster and as server space has grown less expensive and as cloud storage has become more practical, these companies, I've been hearing things like 5 gigabytes for free, 100 gigabytes for free, and even recently unlimited file storage in the cloud. For free. Well, maybe not for free, but but unlimited.
We had
a certain amount for free.
Yeah, we had that term unlimited can be a little bit of a dirty word, as we explored with the CEO of Rebit the other night.
Because unlimited is a wide range of numbers.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's like your unlimited phone plan.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
You've got an unlimited number of minutes up to your limit.
Yeah.
As long as you stay under the limit, it's unlimited.
Yeah.
So online storage, that's there as well. Mm-hmm. And even corporations, corporate software, the software that runs companies, Salesforce.com, Oracle, Microsoft, Sugar CRM, Suite CRM, a lot of these are software platforms that are designed for businesses to run their business, and these are the companies behind those software. All of them either run exclusively in the cloud, like Salesforce.com, or there are versions that run in the cloud, like Oracle and Microsoft have versions that run in the cloud. Maybe not as not as capable as their, as they call, on-premise or installed software, but more and more companies are becoming more like Salesforce, which kind of pioneered the cloud-based computing for business. And so even businesses can run their entire company on the cloud these days without having to worry about which operating system does their employee use. Makes it much more flexible, more of a nightmare for the computer support technician at the company, especially if they have a policy for bring your own computing device to work. And primarily that's around security and so on, so that the operating system that you're using doesn't get infected. But as we get more and more cloud-based for everything that we do, it will become easier and easier to run whatever you want to run, whether it's for home use or for business use, out of the cloud, and not have to worry about, is this person running this business from an iPad or an Android phone, for example,
mm-hmm.
Which is almost possible these days.
Yep, exactly.
So
all right. Well, so now you say you move on here, and you say, hey, call me cheap or just frugal, but you don't like spending money without a good reason, huh?
Yeah, that's true. I don't. And so as long as you have an internet connection and a browser, why do you even need a specific computer?
That's the whole idea.
Why do you have to go out and buy something very expensive?
Yeah, that's always been the idea, you know.
Right.
Platform independent, operating system independent, browser independent. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can go out and buy a gold internet connected watch for from a fruit flavored company out there, or you can buy a Timex. And I think they're still making watches.
Yep.
But
you're talking about Craig now.
No.
Or a Casio. Let's put it that way. Let's go middle of the road here. But even a modest computer with a good internet connection can run cloud applications quickly, because most, if not all, of the processing takes place on the internet, not on the computer. So why do you need a computer with a lot of processing power? You know, when I chose my latest computer is a System 76 Galago Ultra Pro, which runs Linux natively and comes with Linux installed. I chose very, very high specs on RAM and on processor. I got an i7 processor and 16 gigabytes of RAM, not because I need it for checking email, but because I need it for processing video and because I need it for processing audio. So there are still some things today that require a pretty powerful computer, but unless you're doing those kinds of things, you really don't need a powerful computer. You could do just about everything you needed to from a tablet, or maybe even from your phone if the screen wasn't so small, unless you've got, you know, one of those phones that looks like a slab of glass that you're holding up to the side of your ear to talk on. Even phones are getting bigger. But here are some inexpensive options for people who may be as frugal or maybe on a budget and still be able to do what you need to do for checking email, doing your social media, and communicating video conference with your family across the country or in another country. You could use a tablet. There's a large selection of these that run the Android distribution of Linux, essentially a Linux tablet, if you will. An Android, consider it a distribution of Linux. You can use a phone to do all of this stuff. And there's a large selection of these that run the Android distribution of Linux. And there are several others that are being developed to run distributions like the Ubuntu phone and the Firefox phone, all based on Linux. You can use a Chromebook. These run the proprietary Chrome operating system, which is also based on, as we said earlier, the Chromium distribution of Linux. You can use a computer that came with an obsolete operating system like Windows XP or Windows OS 10 Snow Leopard, and install a distribution of Linux on that. You can install the Chromium distribution of Linux and have your own Chromebook if you want. You can install a distribution like Linux Mint or Ubuntu Mate or Lubuntu and have a fully functional computer with a completely modern operating system just running on some hardware that, in computer terms, may be ancient. Oh, it's 5 years old. Oh, my goodness, it's ancient. You know, it's obsolete if you're running the original operating system, but install Linux on there and you'll get years and years of life, and it will perform internet-based computing just as well as an i7 computer with 16 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
So, you know, occasionally I just want it is a good reason, good enough reason for me to go out and blow your budget on you know, a brand new computer. And if you really want to do that and you want to run Linux, you can purchase a purchase-built Linux computer like the one that I have from System 76 or one from Zareason or one from many, many other computer manufacturers out there that provide computers with Linux pre-installed. So you really don't need to buy a proprietary computer with proprietary operating system on it for today's computing, especially if most of what you're doing is on the internet. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line message here is, with today's cloud services providing almost everything an average computer user would want to do, you really don't need anything more powerful than a PC from 2005 running a lightweight Linux distribution to do everyday computing. And yeah. I have a computer older than that running a lightweight Linux distribution that I use every day.
And you find that it does most of the work, unless you're doing that heavy video processing.
Right, and I'm not using it for that. If I want to check email or something, I'll, and if I'm near that computer, I'll use it. Or if I'm near my Chromebook, I'll use that. But if I want to do video processing, I'm using my System 76 or with the 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, or if you want to play World of Warcraft or something like that.
Yeah, not for me. That's not my game.
But you know, I have heard people using computers or like older computers throwing Linux on it and using it for things that, you know, traditionally you really didn't have a dedicated computer for, like. Lots of people take their old computers, put a lightweight version of Linux on it, you know, that's 6, 7, 8 years old, sure. And then just use it for like a music computer, like out in whatever, you know, buy some speakers and put it out in the living room, family room, and
right. Streaming like music server or to play music, you just treat it like a jukebox, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, plenty of people do that kind of thing, and in fact, that little pre-2005 computer I have sitting, and it's in my living room, and it's a clock. Mm. It displays the time and several time zones on a regular basis, and it's a music server as well, and that's what it's sitting there doing. It's going out on the internet, collecting music and collecting podcasts from subscriptions that I have. And I serve it out to my computers or my phone or wherever I want to listen to it, including the nice high-fidelity speakers in the living room.
Do you ever look at that computer and kind of scratch your head and wonder, you know, I used to use this as my main computer?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
How did I do that?
and I have an older one that the screen died on. And I have it as a file server.
Yeah,
running a lightweight Linux distribution. So, and I remote into it, so I don't need the screen. Yeah. So, you know, and it's, I think it's a 2001 or maybe even a 2000 computer that I have an old version of Linux on it. And, you know, these things, they never die. Yeah. And with Linux, you don't have to let them die. You don't have to give them away. You don't have to throw them in the landfill and contribute to waste that's out there.
What about waterfalling? What happened to that?
Waterfalling.
Without
a screen, you can't hand it down.
Here, take my computer. It doesn't have a screen. That's okay.
Plug it into a monitor. Right. It'll work fine.
Yeah, right. I had to walk to school both ways. You know, so you know who needs a screen?
Yeah. I computed for years without anything but a terminal and a keyboard.
That's right. You know, so it's good enough for me, it's good enough for you. Right.
Uh-huh. There you go. It's character building.
Four people.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, I'll use my phone. It's faster.
Yeah, right. Yeah, use my phone. It is probably.
These days.
Yeah, your phone is faster than that ever was.
Yeah. And the Star Fortress in the chat says he has a computer from 1999, runs Windows 98 SE and has wireless network card in it, and another used for old games. So
Fortress has more old computers than anybody I think that I ever know. He's got so many old computers lying around, and he uses them all.
Yeah, and with Windows 98 on it, I don't think they're writing viruses for that anymore, so it's fine to put it on the internet.
You're
hearing of viruses, and the viruses would be like, we can't do anything, there's not enough resources.
There's nothing here to steal, you know.
Exactly.
Well, so there it is. So now we know why you said that the computer operating system really doesn't matter anymore.
Anymore.
It doesn't matter. And so you're saying, so you might as well just use Linux. And
yeah, you might as well. You know, you could install it on what you have today and bring it up to speed. And even if it's a brand new modern computer, you can put a brand new modern Linux distribution on there and make it run better.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people take some of their older Macs and they just they can't get the, they run Linux on them natively, because you can run Windows natively on a Macintosh. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can run things like Parallels and stuff like that if you want to, which will allow you to do the latest operating system and either Windows or Linux. It'll do you that. But a lot of people take the older Macs and just, you know, don't run OS the. Well, first of all, you know, you can't get OS 9 or OS 8 or 7.5. Right. They don't work anymore. Nothing really works them anymore. So put Linux on it. And quite frankly, some of those older Macs with Linux are quite fast. You know,
And the older version of OS 10 is just not supported anymore, and you can't install a new version of OS 10. So rather than get rid of that nice, beautiful hardware, run Linux.
Or give it to one of your kids.
Put Linux on it first,
exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
that's all you need.
Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Boost Radio Network, on the IRN Radio Network, and on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and on stations around the country. You're listening to the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. When we come back, we're going to be doing emails from listeners like you from around the world. Some of them are very, very interesting. They're all very interesting. We're going to be right back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. This is Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And as I mentioned, Larry Bushy continues on with us from the Going Linux podcast. Larry is going to have this show and one more show in December as he finally passes the baton of being our Linux correspondent to someone brand new. We will be announcing who that person will be in the weeks ahead to continue on the Linux message. But he may be gone, but never forgotten.
So. And I may be back.
And you may be back. You know, that's true. Always welcome.
Yeah,
always welcome.
I can call in. I can go on the chat.
You can do whatever you want. Absolutely. You know, and we'll give
you ban me from the chat.
And no. Well, you will always we will always give you correspondent privileges here on a computer. Right? You'll always have correspondent. No, you'll always have correspondent privileges. So now, of course. Our caller, we've had a number of callers just saying, oh, we're going to call on the Linux show. And, of course, none of them called so far.
Nobody called.
So, you know, nobody calls. We got calls all during the week from people, you know, I have a Linux question. Well, you know, this isn't a Linux show, you know. So now it's our Linux show. We're waiting for you. And, again, the number to call is 347-884-8881. 347-884-8881. I'll get you on and get you through. So we're going to shift gears and go into our email portion of the show. And I guess we're going to lead off with a real Lollapalooza. this is a very, very long email from a gentleman named Frank. And for some reason you decided not to pare it down, but to kind of leave it pretty much as is, because he makes some interesting points that you'd want to read and comment about, correct?
Yeah. I could have divided this up into five different emails and
different
made up some names, and you'd never have known the difference. But I broke it into five sections, and I did edit some of it out, believe it or not.
Wow.
And it's still a very long email. So perhaps we should get into it
Let's do it.
Okay, so he starts off, hello, Larry. Your helpful, valuable, and very enjoyable show make me very happy.
You got three exclamation points.
Thanks, Frank. No, I... no, that's just what he started with.
Okay.
And then he relates what, on the Going Linux podcast, we would call a Gone Linux story. So let's get into his Gone Linux story,
okay,
if we will. So... he writes, I've been using Linux since March of 2014. So it's not all that long ago. It was my third attempt to switch to Linux. My first try was about 20 years ago with OpenSUSE, riser format, YAST, and so on. It was installed on my very first PC running a Linux party, or during a Linux party, at my student hostel by some kind and enthusiastic computer geeks. This and the second attempt failed to missing drivers. Problems while orienting in, and I have to say, English is not Frank's first language, so I'm staring here necessarily in the right
order
grammatically, so bear with me a bit here as I'm reading. Problems while orienting in and managing of the system using the command line. This seemed too difficult and too strange for me these days, and some frustration about missing or poor success using the software these days. I also got the impression that the programs had a poor look and feel, seemed to have only a few functions, and seemed hard to handle for me. So this was quite some time ago, apparently. Mm-hmm. For example, GIMP had these awful menus where the sub aspects were staggered diagonally and a little bit lower than the main aspect, which leads to loosening the focus many times. Okay. And it had all these little windows flying around everywhere. OpenOffice Writer had serious problems to managing the format of Microsoft Word. Yeah, I remember those days. Mm-hmm. And GIMP was a mess back then. Mm-hmm. So I stood steadfast with Windows until Windows XP. I didn't have big problems with it. I loved to use Visual Basic in the beginning, mostly self-educated, and could create many helpful macros in Microsoft Office, especially Access. It's a great software for unprofessional, quote, programmers. Microsoft did and does a good job, but provide a lot of limitations and security/privacy problems too. I think many issues people struggling with Linux while testing it the first time are caused by the harsh driver discrimination of hardware companies, neglect or service providers. I couldn't run the update software for my GPS device, even with Wine, for example.
And we're not talking about the kind you drink, by the way. Okay.
Yeah. Even with a bottle of wine.
Yeah, exactly.
And complications with innocent or I think he means novice Windows users.
Yeah.
For example, failing to open DocX with LibreOffice and so on. But that's not the fault of Linux. But I have the feeling that these problems have become less and less. Mm. These days, this year, I started the third try with Ubuntu. I was impressed by the easy installation and the fine look and feel, but didn't like the Unity menu. I want an overview of my available programs, and often it didn't work out for me how I should work. Allegedly. I'm not sure what he means there. I guess he means it was difficult to figure out how to find applications in the Ubuntu menu. He says being able to find menu aspects of other programs by just typing the name of the function, for example. After struggling with unpleasant workaround, I tried to use Kubuntu, but was frustrated because installation repeatedly didn't work out. The system seemed to freeze sometimes, and after losing the main menu of the desktop by designing my own style, by default, all aspects of KDE are not fixed and locked. Mm-hmm. I gave up. I was very sad, but I really like the look and feel of KDE and love to adjust everything I want. Mm-hmm. Well, just pausing for a second to comment, one of the big advantages of KDE is you can change anything that you want, literally anything that you want in KDE. And one of the disadvantages of KDE is you can change anything that you want, and as a result, you can really screw it up.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Frank did that. So continuing on, he says, later on, I was irritated finding out that there is this spy aspect where Ubuntu sends hidden information about my behavior, my online behavior, to Canonical, which they provide to Amazon in order to sell me things. Ah. And he provides a link, and we've included the link in the show notes, to a Richard Stallman commenting on Ubuntu's suspected spying behavior on Linux users. Take it with a grain of salt. It is Richard Stallman, after all. This is the opposite of my understanding of Linux as a trustful and private system. Canonical should mention this before installation, and they should mention it explicitly. Well, I think they do mention it, maybe not as explicitly as they should. I would agree with that. But you can turn it off, by the way. But when I discovered Linux Mint 16 Mate, I fell in love with it from the very first moment. Everything worked out fine, fast, and smoothly. Of course, until I destroyed the system by playing around with features and deleting and deinstalling important parts of the system. The more you use it, the more you play with it, the more mistakes you make, the more you learn by fixing them. But even that took a half an hour to reinstall everything. The tinkerer's salvation, reinstall. Finally, now with Linux Mint 17, Kiana, I successfully switched to the KDE desktop. Stop tinkering. Now I can do almost anything with Linux or free software I was able to do with Windows, and even more. For the few things that I can't do with Linux, I still have very old no-name scanner. I use a virtual Windows XP under VMware. I still prefer a GUI mouse management system, but don't fear or hesitate to use the command line if handy or necessary. So that's Frank's story of how he got successfully with Linux over the years. And he's been using it since, what did he say, March of this year?
Yeah, exactly.
With,
a long time
user. 17.
Okay.
So he's done the thing that many of us have done. Started and tinkered himself into something that just works. And I have to agree, Frank, Linux Mint 17 is a wonderful version of Linux, and I recommend it highly to anyone just starting to use Linux. So he's got basically one paragraph now on learning Python, and Python is a programming language. So he's gone from tinkering with Linux to tinkering with programs now. So he said, I want to learn Python or OpenOffice Basic in order to write macros for LibreOffice. But this still seems to be very challenging for me. The macro recorder isn't much help. OpenOffice Basic seems to be much more complicated and less handy. Until today, I find it hard to use LibreOffice Base, which is the database component of the LibreOffice suite. I can't do much more than create tables. I don't want to use the wizard where most of the descriptions I found ends, but I do, and I understand it myself. There seems to be no good alternative to Open or LibreOffice in the Linux world. It is so hard to find advanced information about LibreOffice Base. Do you have any recommendation? I would prefer real books rather than digital formats. Well, yeah, so there are plenty of books out there on how to use LibreOffice. Unfortunately, most of them are digital format.
Yeah, you would think
you
so.
You have a printer.
You always print them out if you want to turn the pages. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the issue with digital formats is if you've only got one screen, it's hard to do things on that same screen as you're trying to read on. Unless you've got multiple computers or a tablet or something that you can display the book on, it becomes a little more difficult. So I can understand that. So you can go online, and many of those digital versions of the books they will offer to sell you and mail you a copy, but go on Amazon. There are books written on how to use LibreOffice there. And if you want to learn through video, we'll have a link in the show notes as well to a person that we've mentioned in the past who provides videos on how to use LibreOffice, all of the components, the word processor and the spreadsheet and the database. And he's got a series of them, and you can learn to use LibreOffice through videos if you prefer that as well.
All right, very cool.
Okay, lots of possibilities there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, software recommendations. He's got some software recommendations for us. After cutting up the old version of GIMP, he says, I love the current GIMP version. There are so many helpful mini desktop utilities for KDE as well. Some software that I want to recommend. AutoKey. This allows you to type phrases automatically and can be programmed with Python to do almost anything. And we've talked about AutoKey. I use it all the time. It is like the text expander.
Yeah, I was going to say I use text expander
for
Mac.
Version of that.
I used to use from Rainmaker Software. It was a spell catcher, and that was wonderful. But unfortunately, the author of that passed away. And there's been no support for it since several versions of the operating system before. So I finally said goodbye to Spellcatcher and started using Text Expander. And for the most part, Text Expander does everything that I'd really wanted to. I mean, there were still a couple of little things that Spellcatcher had. Like for example, it had ghosting or ghostwriter. So if you made a mistake. Or if you erase something, it kind of remembers every keystroke that you made and put it in a little file, which was kind of nice. But,
keylogger.
Built-in keylogger. I was thinking exactly the same thing.
It's a built-in keylogger. But you know it's logging it and you know where it is. But I really do like Text Expander. They keep updating.
Craig, this is that spyware that was put on the computer.
I paid a lot for it.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I do like Text Expander, and I highly recommend it to it. Yeah, exactly.
And I like AutoKey as well. It's it has a lot of the similar features to Text Expander and is a native Linux program and does just fine. And I use it every day.
Mm-hmm.
FreeMind, this is a mind mapping program that Frank is recommending. Can also be used under Windows 2. And if I remember, maybe it's not FreeMind, but there's another open source version of something similar for use on OS 10 as well. And there are similar sorts of mind mapping programs that are available as Chrome extensions too, so you might want to look there if you really want to do things on the cloud. You don't need to even install things. So getting back to Frank's recommendations, the Lancelot menu. This is something I don't know anything about, but it is a menu that you can add to Linux apparently, and as a result, as you can with all Linux distributions, you have full control of just about everything you want to do there, including using a different menu if you really want to.
Well, I'll tell you this. The Lancelot menu is an application launcher for KDE Workspace, designed to provide a place from which all your jobs begin. It provides a quick access to applications, places, documents, contacts, and system information. So that's what it does.
So it's a substitute for the K menu that comes with KDE. Mm-hmm. I think it's still called K menu. It was when I used KDE.
Mm-hmm.
And you just uninstall or just hide the existing menu and replace it with this one, and away you go. Or you can use a dock if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, Frank's recommending Lancelot menu. Give it a try.
Yeah.
Another program, the last one that he's recommending is something called Bluefish. It allows rapid programming too by typing a few abbreviations. And Bluefish is a web page authoring software. Yeah. So if you are the kind of person who likes to design your own web pages, Bluefish is a great program for doing that. I don't use it for the Going Linux website, but I do use it if I just want to do something quick and easy in HTML. It's a great program for that. And if I just need a simple web page for someone else, or I just need to give somebody a snippet of HTML, I'll fire up Bluefish and use that. There's a version of it for Windows as well. So that's a great program too.
All right.
So continuing on with Frank's email, we're not done with Frank's email yet. We've still got quite a bit to go here. So section 4 about the show. I have an older laptop on which I could not install Linux Mint. It has also a non-PAE processor architecture. The DistroWatch site was very helpful in helping me to find Linux, anti-X Linux. And this is unlike anti-May or something like that. This is anti-X, so against X, I guess. Mm-hmm. I could install it without any problem. It's a very lightweight Linux distribution. Mm-hmm. Even my wireless card, my wireless internet connection was suddenly able to do the WPA2 encryption service. For a number of years, I was told that this was a hardware issue and that I would have to buy new hardware to fix that. Aha, little do they know, Linux to the rescue. The only disappointment was that I didn't have a KDE desktop. First, I was looking for another distribution with KDE. Later, I heard on your show that it is possible to use any desktop with every distribution. So finally, I enjoy KDE on my anti-X Debian system. While looking for a good Linux podcast, I checked out a lot, but only your podcast seems to be valuable for me. Well, thanks, Frank. I'm sure there are some out there that are equally valuable, but I'm really pleased that you like ours. He says, you're very much to the point, so I can use all of your shows as a source of support anytime, even the old ones. Very informative, especially for new users. Very high sound quality and very pleasant to listen to your fine English. Especially as a non-native speaker who could hardly understand American dialects, idioms, and slang. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd never know that the way I'm stumbling over your email here, Frank, but thanks again. It is very good to understand for people who has just little or slightly advanced technological knowledge. You use plain English to explain technical terms and functions very vividly and carefully. It is full of enthusiasm, nice sense of humor, and respectful attitude to your former co-host, Tom. What a pity he is no longer on the show. Guests and even critical listeners. Mm-hmm. So I've started to listen to all of your shows beginning from the very first show. I started to listen to all your former shows. It is great. Somebody's really persistent about trying to get a hold of me here. It's ringing like crazy. I started to listen to all your shows beginning from the very first show. I have started to listen to all your former shows. It is great to learn about Linux while driving to work. At the moment, I'm listening to show number 60. Well, Frank, this episode that is the Computer America episode will be show 262, so you've got a little ways to go yet.
Yeah, exactly.
He continues on. From my experience, it is very helpful to have someone who introduces you to a new operating system and software. I don't have anyone nearby who is much experienced in Linux, so having your shows gives me the feeling of having a good friend nearby who kindly accompanies me stepping deeper into the Linux world. My plan, my devious plan, is working.
See, I was going to say, aww.
I have some questions about Linux, which I may send to you later on. Maybe they have already been answered during one of the shows I didn't enjoy yet. Hmm. Well, you've got 200 and some odd to go, so it's possible. Okay, and then the fifth section is where he says thanks. So here we go. And we can get this in during the first half hour or second hour. So this email has become very long, you think?
Yeah.
Feel free to mention interesting parts in one of your listener feedback shows. I hope my written English is good to understand. Mm-hmm. If not, just give me a short reply and I will try to explain what I had intended to say. For now, thank you so much for your enthusiastic, persistent, and highly quality show, even after so many shows. I am very grateful for your precious service. Best regards, Frank.
Yeah.
And Frank, thank you for all the compliments, but more importantly, for all of your enlightenment as to your journey in learning to use Linux and how we've been able to help you do that, and all your experiences in trying to get some knowledge about how to use Linux and open source software. It's definitely interesting, and I know our listeners enjoy this a lot.
Okay, so there you go. That was a long email. It's probably one of, that was probably the of all the years you've been on the show. I think that's the longest email that you've ever
that's
done.
That's got the record. Absolutely.
That's the record. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like he, I think it was so long because I mean he's crammed a lot of Linux experience into such a short amount of time. I mean, you know, not even a year's gone by, and he's, you know, tried so many different. He's already gotten into programming. He's done this and that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he said he has been using Linux as his main operating system since the beginning of the year. I think a lot of this history had gone on prior to that. So I don't think you crammed all of this into less than a year. But it certainly is a good deal of history, and it makes for a good story. It really does. And for some reason, our listeners enjoy listening to the Gone Linux stories, and Frank's is kind of a classic for sure. A novel,
yeah.
In the making. So, do we have time for this
Jack.
Little
yeah,
teeny
can,
one?
Yeah, from little Jack. Teeny one from Jack. We can do this. Okay.
Yeah, we can do this one. It's only like three sentences long. And Jack commented on Google Plus, as a matter of fact, on our latest episode, which was episode 261, written, edited, and produced by my co-host Bill. So he writes, Bill, my compliments on your work on Going Linux 261, a great first solo, and all the hums and haws edited out too. Keep up the good work, both of you. And Bill did all the work himself. He did an episode specifically on an introduction to KDE, getting to know KDE, and he reviewed several of the distributions that use KDE as their native desktop environment. And in talking to Bill about the show, he intends to do a similar sort of review for other desktop environments as well, to give our listeners an idea of what is a desktop environment and how is it different from Linux distribution to Linux distribution, because although it's the same desktop environment, mm-hmm. that would be on Kubuntu or OpenSUSE, for example, the software packages that they provided or the utilities that they provided are very, very different on each of them. And so although it's a KDE distribution, they look very different and they behave very differently. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the joys of Linux. It's yep. like a box of chocolates. You never know what's
you never
there.
Know. That's right. Forrest Gump there, reference. But that is very good. I'll tell you what, we're almost at the bottom of the hour break. Mm-hmm.
So welcome back to the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy is continuing on with us, and we're going through the emails. We did the marathon one, and then we did the sprint one, and now we're moving on to an email from one of your listeners. His name is Charles, and apparently he got a new computer from System 76.
Yeah.
Well, he was asking me about mine anyway, and Hi, Larry and Bill. Thanks for all the great information you provide in the podcasts. I am always two or three episodes behind in listening, so this might be a bit dated. Well, if you're only two or three behind, you're far in advance of most of our listeners who, you know, there are two kinds of listeners to podcasts. Those that listen to every episode as soon as they're released, mm-hmm. and then there are those that put them on whatever their listening device is, their phone or their iPod or whatever it is. Do they still make iPods?
Yeah, they do. Actually.
And they listen whenever they get the chance. And sometimes it's two or three weeks later. So, two or three episodes behind, no big deal. He continues, the System 76 Galago computer you mentioned in your podcast sounds very interesting. I, too, am a fan of Linux Mint and run it on my Think Penguin Wii 4 desktop. Mm-hmm. Can you guess that's a Linux computer?
Right.
It works great with no issues. However, my aging group of hand-me-down portables just are not up to full Linux Mint 17 with Cinnamon Desktop. They range from 4 to 8 years old. Yes, I have an 8-year-old Dell Inspiron that is still chugging along with the original hard drive, no less. The battery pack, though, is toast. The other two are netbooks, which are just a bit too slow for my ham hands, and one has a quote creative keyboard layout. Thus, I have been considering investing in a new machine with an eye to running Mint. This sounds like the right fit for my needs. There was some talk about issues with the keyboard on early Galago machines. Hopefully, that's been cleared up. I understand System 76 made good on the ones with problems. That is the kind of support I like to see. As you know, everything cannot be perfect. The main thing is to make the things right and correct the problem. Mm-hmm. And, I had heard about those problems with the keyboard on the early models of Galago. And, System 76 made good on them, just as you said. They provide excellent support. He continues, how does the Galago stand up to everyday use? Does it feel substantial enough to be carried everywhere and survive? How's the battery life? Is the screen readable at different angles and in bright light? Sorry to bombard you with all the questions, but I live so far out in the sticks, I am very unlikely to run into anyone who uses one. Do you know what was going on earlier this week at System 76, November 10th through 14th? There was just a landing page on their site saying a robot had damaged things and they were rebuilding. Perhaps it was just a server problem. Thanks in advance for your help.
I hate it when robots do that.
You can never trust those robots.
No.
Keep up the great podcast. Regards, Charles. So it's possible they had, you know, somebody attack their website, but I do know in around that time they were redesigning their site. And if you go there today, they've got a nice, slick, modern, responsive design to their website. If you have seen their old website, you recognize it. It is definitely a modern website, just as easy as it was before to find what you're looking for, but much more pleasing on the eye. So I'm assuming that that was possibly what was going on there. As far as your questions are concerned about the Galago, it's a 14-inch notebook computer, and it's available with an i7 processor. There's really no other option. What else would you want, by the way? But you can get it with less RAM than what I've got. And so depending on how you've configured it, that will determine a lot about the battery life. But in answer to your question about being able to carry it everywhere, I carry it everywhere, at least from my office to the living room and back. And I will say that it is not as sturdy as my MacBook Air that I have for work, provided by my company. Of course, that has an aluminum case, and the Galago Pro has a plastic case, if you will. And it does feel a little bit plasticky. It looks from a distance like it's metal, but it's not. And it seems very, very sturdy. It's not super flexible. It's not thin plastic by any stretch, but it is plastic, and I don't think I would scratch it along a rough surface because it would scratch. Other than that, I think it's going to be just fine for carrying it around to Linux conferences and things like that. And as a result, I would have to recommend that it is substantial enough, and it's about 4 pounds. So as far as heft is concerned, it's not a bad weight for a 14-inch computer. It doesn't have a CD drive in it to add to the weight or to the size. The battery life on this computer with the 16 gig of RAM and the i7 processor varies a little bit depending on how bright you have the screen set. And so before I get into the battery life, let me describe the screen. It is readable at multiple angles. It is an extremely bright screen. It is not a glossy screen. It's a matte finish screen. Mm-hmm. So as a result, you don't get a lot of the reflections. And so the brightness on the screen, I typically don't have it at 100% brightness because I don't need it, especially when I'm using it indoors, which is most of the time. I can use it routinely at 30% brightness. And when I have it on 30% brightness, I can get 4 hours worth of battery life out of it with no trouble at all. If I had it at 100% brightness, I would burn the back retina of my eyes, but I'm sure the battery life would be nowhere near that 4 hours, probably closer to 2 or 3, but you really don't have to have it that bright. As you're looking at the screen from an angle, it does tend to dim a little bit, but it is still very, very readable, even almost at 90 degrees from the screen. So looking at it almost along the surface of the screen, you can still read what's on there, even at less than full brightness. And certainly at full brightness, you can see things quite clearly without any trouble at all, even at an angle. So left and right angle and up and down angle as well. If you look at it vertically, you lay the screen back, or you put it forward, you can see it no problem at all. So yeah. If you've got two or three people around looking at your screen, you're showing off your new Galago Pro, they'll be able to see the screen no problem at all. So I have to recommend it as highly as I did before I bought it. And even more highly, because I'm very, very pleased with it. Not only because it runs Linux, but because it's a good, solid computer that does what I need it to do. And I'm quite pleased with it.
Okay.
So there you go. Long answer to that one than the email was.
Right.
But that's what you get when you ask questions. Answers.
That's true.
Did you say the price, by the way?
Like, I did not say the price. It varies. Yeah, it varies from, I think the lowest is about $1,100 or $1,200 for the low end. And you can configure it up to, I think it's about $1,500 or $1,600. So it's definitely on the high end, but it's a high performance notebook computer with an extremely bright screen.
And you're paying for the hardware. You're not paying for the software, you know.
Absolutely. And you're paying for the support as well. When you buy from System 76, they provide an extremely generous warranty. I hear that just after I bought mine, they extended the warranty to lifetime warranty.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. So on the software. So they support Ubuntu on their systems for the life of your computer.
Wow.
So and their hardware warranty is a prorated warranty that you can buy extended warranty directly from them, if you wish, but they provide a lot of good online support directly from System 76 and the good folks there, and there's a vibrant System 76 computing community that provides support too, and you get support on System 76 computers from the Ubuntu community as well, since they provide Ubuntu software on their computers as it comes from their outlet. They provide Ubuntu, and they provide support for that for the life of your computer. So very good.
All right.
Of course, I replaced Ubuntu with Linux Mint as soon as I got my computer, but that's just me. I'm that tinkerer that broke its first computer with Linux on it.
You didn't
by tinkering too much.
You didn't even try it for a few minutes to see if you liked it before you changed it?
I did try it for a few minutes to see if I liked it, and I really, really, really wanted to like Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Really don't like that Unity interface, so I switched it for something that I knew I liked.
What about the Unity interface? Didn't you particularly like?
I don't find it intuitive. A lot of people do, and a lot of people grow into it. They don't find it intuitive at the beginning, and then they figure out how to make it work, and they like it after that. But I find that it's designed for a touch screen.
Wow.
That's what it appears to be to me. And as a result, when you're using a mouse, and by the way, the Galago Pro is not a touchscreen computer. It just seems like they've designed it for a touchscreen, and it just doesn't seem all that intuitive.
I was curious as to why that was, but that certainly is a justification. I mean, people who got Windows 8 and they don't have a touchscreen on their computer.
Yeah.
That was one of the main gripes, you know, that they would prefer. And of course, with Windows 10, they're going to fix all that. So, but
right, and I would liken it to Windows 8. It mm-hmm. it just seems like it's designed for a touchscreen, and if you don't have a touchscreen, or you don't want to use your finger to mess up your screen on your laptop, maybe that's not the one for you. But it is quite usable with a mouse. It's mm-hmm. just it works kind of quirky.
Got it.
And I don't want quirky.
Nope.
I want something that just works.
That's it.
The way I want it to work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work the way I want it to work. I'm going to tinker with it until it does. But that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the screens either. It's just, you know, I usually have my fingers coated in a fine layer of Dorito dust. So screens just don't work.
So you have powder all over your keyboard.
Exactly.
Dorito powder. if they were cheesies, they would be orange powder. But anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, we should. We're going to go to the, okay. the UK now.
Ken, I think,
oh, okay.
did we,
oh, Ken.
Did we
okay.
do Ken's? No, we didn't read no. Ken's.
Okay, let's do Ken's first. Okay.
Okay. So Ken comments on computers with Linux pre-installed. He says, Larry, I have installed Linux on several computers not originally intended for Linux, mostly with no problems. Where I have had problems is where I want to use a scanner, printer, made by a company who doesn't provide Linux drivers. Well, that will be a problem. I have the neatest Canon scanner that works great on Windows, Apple II, I suppose, but they don't provide support for Linux, and the generic Linux scanner software doesn't work with it. Now, on the other side of the fence, HP stuff has always worked. I'm curious as to what your store-bought Linux computer does better than mine. Well, it runs the scanner better than yours. I'm currently running Linux Mint on a semi-old Acer laptop. I don't know what semi-old means, but it's only half as old as an old Acer laptop.
Evidently.
And on a fairly new home-built machine, AMD processor on Asus
motherboard,
I guess that is. Mm-hmm. They work just fine. Unfortunately, I still have to run some Windows 7 computers for CAD, CNC, ACDC, photo software, and so on. The biggest surprise in satisfying computing is my new Toshiba Chromebook, 13-inch screen. Just open it up and start doing things. No booting, no software maintenance. I use it more than all the other computers that I have. One of the favorite fun things is casting YouTube, Netflix, etc. to a Chromecast gadget connected to my TV. By the way, this is being written on the Chromebook. Also, I would never buy anything Apple. I don't like the company attitude, nor many of their snobby users. My phone is in. Thank you for going, Linus.
Yeah, yeah.
And, okay.
We're all snobby.
We're not going to get into Apple bashing here. But in answer to your question about my store-bought Linux computer, what can it do that your computer doesn't do? Well, nothing, really. The advantage of getting a computer with Linux pre-installed on it is the very thing that you're struggling with, that you are guaranteed that the hardware on your computer will just work with Linux because it's designed to work with Linux. And unfortunately, there are peripheral manufacturers, Canon being one of them, where not all of their hardware is supported on Linux. And not all of their hardware is supported on Apple either in some cases. So especially when it comes to scanners and multifunction printers, there are a few out there that still are problematic. And you're quite right, Ken. If you stick with HP when it comes to printers and scanners, they will just work. HP does a phenomenal job of Linux support. And there are other manufacturers out there that do the same. But as far as printers are concerned, you can't beat an HP for Linux compatibility.
There you go. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Let's go, Michael, UK.
Okay. he's trying to get Ubuntu installed and the Orca screen reader working. And we've exchanged quite a few emails with him, helping him to get set up. And by virtue of the fact that he's trying to get the Orca screen reader working, you can tell that he is a blind or low vision user. And here's our latest follow-up to him. Or from him, rather. Mm-hmm. I forgot to say why I am a happy new Linux user when I wrote my previous email. The reason is no more of those pop-ups which used to irritate me when I was running Windows 8.1. Mm-hmm. I would get some message at certain times about Toshiba Tempro or some other message about something being test. I'm not a novice to computers, and maybe not the advanced user I would like to be, but I never did work out why these messages about something or other being tested keep popping up. Although the one message might have had something to do with certain apps Toshiba put on their laptops. Once I have backed up my important files for my system, I can then install other important apps I would like to run. I heard on one or a few of your podcast episodes that the home directory is a very important one as regards the greeting at the top of this and the previous emails, which he actually started with a greeting that I edited out, as a matter of fact, so I'll have to go take a look at that. He says, I used to have a friend at college who was quite loud and didn't bother about what people thought of her, which did come in handy because she was going to confront other students I had bullying issues with if it hadn't come to her notice, because I had told her that I had been bullied previously by a lad who, in fact, ended up attending the same college as myself and this friend. The greeting comes from how she used to say, how do, to people. So yeah, that's the greeting. Good luck with future Going Linux.
All right.
I like the way he writes run-on sentences.
Hey,
no
Larry.
Punctuation.
Larry.
Yes, sir.
We have a caller. His name is Jack.
Oh,
his
great.
Name is Jack, and he's listening to us in Canada, and he has a Linux question for you. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Jack.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I want to say that, in Linux, how can you do SSH? Is that true that all the, suppose once you put, say google.com or any of those things, it always goes to a different city. Can you tell me why? Is that Linux based or is that closest Linux thing? Why it doesn't show your own city when you do
SSH is a protocol that you can use to log into another computer remotely. And that is sometimes installed by default on Linux, depending on what your Linux distribution is, or it's very easily installed if it's not there by default. And it allows you to set up your computer so that you can log into it from another computer over the internet. And that really doesn't have anything to do with which city comes up. So getting to your other city question, how are you seeing that? Is that in your browser?
I mean, say if you go to say, what is that? The map.com. Not Google, the other one, not Yahoo, the other one. That's is popular. I mean, you put it, it goes to the, for example, say Phoenix, for example, but you are not located in Phoenix. But then, of course, you have to put the driving address, and then it finds you correct information. But always when you do it, it's always show, for example, Phoenix. Is that because your system is connected to the Linux in Phoenix area then?
Yeah, so this really doesn't have anything to do with Linux. It would work. It would do exactly the same thing, even if it was a Windows server or a Unix server that's out there. What's going on there, Jack, is that when you are on the internet on a computer as opposed to on a phone, the computer doesn't know where you are. There's no GPS. And so when you go to the map, it looks to see where the server is that you're coming from. So if the server that you happen to connect to when you connected your computer to the internet is in Phoenix, the map will think that you are in Phoenix, even if you're not, but because that's where the server is. And I think that's kind of what you had figured out. Now, the reason it doesn't do that when you're using a phone to do your maps is because your phone has a GPS in it, and even if it didn't have a GPS in it, the internet map can figure out where you are from the cell phone connection, the mobile phone connection that you're using from the cell towers. Mm-hmm. So it may not be as accurate as GPS, but it certainly can get very close to where you are. So when you're on your phone, the maps will come up. It'll know where your current position is because you have some sort of locating device which your computer doesn't have. So the best it can do is figure out, okay, so where is the server that, that this person is using to connect to me, and it uses that.
For example,
Phoenix, if
Phoenix or it shows Michigan, or it can show any cities, you know, so server is from that.
Yeah.
It can show any city.
So if you connect today to the internet and your internet service provider happens to route you through a server in Boston, the internet will think you're in Boston. If it happens to route you through a server in Michigan, it'll think that you're in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure why an internet server service provider would be routing you like that. Typically, they operate with their own servers, but it's possible.
Hey Jack, had I known that what your question was not a Linux question, we could have helped you before. But hey, listen, we're glad that we're helping. And of course, if you're using a VPN, of course, then they really don't know where you are, and then the map would probably just not even show, or it would just show it would show maybe to one of the servers that the VPN was using. But listen, hopefully that answers your question, and certainly glad to call you back. Yeah.
I just want to say Viva Linux 14.4 Ubuntu. That's the only way to go. Thank you
much. All right, Jack. Thanks for calling. Bye bye. All right. Well, there you go. From Canada. I know he called before, and I was hoping to get his question. Had I known that that was his question, we could have helped him out. You know, but he definitely had a Linux question. So there you go.
He thought it was a Linux question. Who are we to argue?
Yeah. Hey, listen.
I don't know. Larry answered it pretty darn well.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, he did. Really. Listen. We're pretty much out of time. And I know now there are some other emails that you haven't read, but you know we have them on our show notes page. Go to our show notes page at computeramerica.com. You'll see today's show, November the 20th, and we have the links to the questions and the show notes there as well for you to read if you listen to the show later on, time shifted. It's there. Hey, Larry, I want to thank you so much for being with us here tonight. Again,
my pleasure as always.
Yeah, one more time in December before we pass the baton. Of course, by that time, we'll probably know who's going to be taking your place.
I thought you were just keeping it a secret.
Yeah, we'll just go. Hey. Stay with us to the end on our video. So thanks to all of you. Again, it's our time to say goodnight here on our All Linux Show. And we will see you tomorrow night. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. See you tonight.
Good night, everyone.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.